What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Uncensored Podcast. I'm Carter Haas, and today I'm here with
Michael Fox.
And Coach Fox is coming off back-to-back state championships as the defensive coordinator of the Trinity Shamrock football team. Coach, how does it feel to go back-to-back, especially, you know, with a lot of people in the media saying, oh, the Trinity defense won't be what it used to be. They lost a lot of good people from the year before. How do you use that as motivation to help get your guys ready for this upcoming season? Because a lot of people didn't know how it would look with a lot of new faces on the defense, but you really did what you did and made this defense a strong unit.
I mean, I think it was a fair criticism. I mean, if you look just at, you know, last year replacing 8 or 9 starters, you know, we thought we had something in Nick Lococo, but he was injured and missed a lot of last year. Caleb Ricks was injured and missed a lot of last year. So you were really looking at only Bailey Vance, J.C. Wilson, and Sekou Kamara, who were coming back, you know, with significant varsity playing time. Sonny Bratcher did some really good things for us in the playoffs. So, you know, we understand from the outside why that comparison happened and maybe why there was some of that doubt. You know, we tried to use it as a motivator for the kids to say, look, people doubt you. But the thing I don't think someone from an outside perspective looking in really understands about Trinity football, and I've tried to share this with some of my friends in coaching. You know, I've tried to share it with people when I left Trinity and was a head coach for a little bit. But the amount of time and the work ethic that we demand of our players and our students and what they put in, it's literally unlike anyone else. And so, you know, that's what always gives us confidence is we know how much work we put in. The kids know how much work they put in. So we feel like we always have that opportunity, and we feel like if we can navigate the early part of our season healthy, and Coach Beatty said it, and Coach Cobb continues to say it, you know, the goal is not to be the best team in September, but it's to try to find the way to, you know, mix those pieces together and find ways to get better every single week so that by November, we're playing the best football that we can play, and that gives us an opportunity to be in it at the end, and that's all we can ask for. Mm.
So you brought it up. So you were with Trinity from 14 through 16, I believe, before you left to take the Oldham County head coaching job for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. So you made that jump. You had some really good seasons over at Oldham County from when they went from 5A, then they made the jump to 6A. But then in 2020, you came back to Trinity. Why did you come back to Trinity? Because a lot of people, when they reach head coach, that's their pinnacle. That's their peak. But why come back to Trinity to be the defensive coordinator?
So, you know, in 2014, Coach Beatty changed the entire defensive staff. And so that's one of the things that's really special to me about getting to work at Trinity, and I don't know how many people outside the program know this. So Coach Cobb was hired as the defensive coordinator in 2014. Coach Logan had already been on staff, and as a Trinity alum, he stayed. But Coach Cobb hired Coach Carpenter, Coach Leslie, and myself. So, you know, if you really think about that, besides a couple years that I left, there's 11 seasons where we've all worked together. And I think at the high school level, that's really rare. But we got to come in together. You know, what we run is the defense Coach Cobb installed and taught to us. So that was really special. You know, just for me personally, my dad started coaching at Trinity with Coach Servino. So he played at J-Town. He played at Moorhead State. He was the quarterback actually after Phil Sims. Then he was the head coach at North Bullitt, was the head coach at J-Town for a little bit, but he started working at Trinity in the late 90s. I actually wanted to go to Trinity, and my mom and dad are divorced. Grew up with a lot of friends that went to Trinity, but I did not. I went to Bullitt East. My two younger brothers are Trinity grads. And so, you know, I'd always been around Trinity football. So when an opportunity came in 2014, that, you know, it was really exciting for me, and I thought it was an opportunity for a lot of growth. And Coach Cobb was really great to me from the first day we met, because he was very honest. And what are your goals? I mentioned wanting to be a head coach. Mm-hmm. And he set me down and said, well, then I'm going to give you as much responsibility as you can show you can handle. And he threw some stuff at me that I wasn't ready for, but it made me better. And I tell Coach Leslie and Coach Carpenter and Coach Logan all the time too, like my first year, you know, I looked around and I thought highly of all those guys as coaches, as Coach Cobb as a coach, Coach Coverdale on offense, Coach Beatty. And like, it's a lot of internal pressure because I didn't want to be the weak link, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't want my guys to not be prepared. And so that put a lot of pressure on us internally. and we pushed each other. And I think, again, as coaching, that's something about working at Trinity that's a lot of fun. But being a head coach was a goal. And so I interviewed at Oldham County after the state championship in 2016 and really didn't have any expectations because I didn't know anybody going into it. But got the job there. I was proud of what we did. I was very thankful that my dad came and was my offensive coordinator, and Tayshawn McBroom, who's a Trinity grad and his son Nation plays for us right now, came with me. That was a big help because it brought some guys that kind of knew what it would take to kind of improve the product there and push kids, and it was guys that I trusted. But after 2020, and we had to play Trinity in 2019 in the playoffs, so that was a wake up call too, just letting the kids know, you know, this is the pinnacle and this is what you're trying to work towards. But Coach Cobb and I had a phone call, and you know, he was going to be named the head coach after Coach Beatty, and asked if I had an interest in coming back. And again, I feel very fortunate that I've worked with some really good coaches and worked for some really good coaches. But Coach Cobb has done more for me professionally as far as just challenging me and pushing me to be a better coach. You know, even when I was the coach at Oldham County, I talked with Coach Cobb weekly. And so my wife and I sat down and had a really good conversation and just, you know, thinking about, we have two sons and two daughters, and where do we want our kids to go to school, and what's going to be best for me to keep improving as a coach. And also it helped that COVID was going on, mm-hmm. and being a head coach during COVID kind of was not fun with all of the, just all the things we had to do between disinfecting footballs and socially distancing groups and taking 10 kids on a bus to go to an away game. And so I think it was actually what I needed at the right time, because I think if I had kept doing that, I probably would have felt a little burnt out to the point that maybe I wouldn't have even wanted to coach anymore. So being able to come back to Trinity, work for Coach Cobb again, really just get to focus on football, because again, when you're a head coach, you're dealing with fundraising, you're dealing with so many other things that sometimes the coaching is the last thing you get to do. And so these last 4 years have been nice because I've gotten to, again, work with some of the people that I have a lot of respect for, and I've got to go back to just focusing on the game planning, the X's and O's, and the football side of things. So it's been nice.
Yeah, I feel like being in Coach Cobb's class, he's always very open and honest, even with his students. And I feel like that's a really big thing, to be honest, because if someone is sugarcoating you and saying you're doing a good job, but like, you do have room to improve. Like, Coach Cobb seems like the type of coach where it's like, he's going to get everything out of you. He's just going to squeeze the rag till everything comes out and get the very best out of you.
I think I can say this because I don't think Coach Cobb's a big social media guy. I don't want to hurt your feelings. I don't think he'll listen to the podcast. That's just not what he does.
Yeah.
But he does. He puts on this this presentation, you know, that he's a gruff old coach, but when you talk to him one-on-one, and I think any of the players would tell you this too, I mean, he is a player's coach from the standpoint of he cares. He cares about every kid in that locker room. He cares about every coach in that office. And again, he's not going to outwardly say all that stuff, but he coaches because he wants what's best for kids. He wants what's best for our staff. He wants to make us better. You know, that was something he talked to me about when he was looking to replace Coach Beatty, is he said, I want to be in a role where I can coach the coaches a little more and I can help the coaches reach their goal. And again, I can't thank him enough for the things he's done for me as an individual. And it's made me grow as a coach and made me a better person because of it.
Mm-hmm. So right now you all are in the off season, and then I know you all have the rule. It's like they can wear the state championship stuff until around January before you all get back in the weight room and all that. But what does off season preparation look like for you?
For me as a coach, or are you just talking about us as a whole team? Or
you as a coach and as a team.
So, you know, the kids will have a little time off. We'll have the banquet in January, late January, early February. Coach Snyder will get them back in the weight room. And again, that's where the games are won. And I know it sounds a little cliche, but Coach Snyder's the best of the best. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they fired all of us tomorrow but kept Mike Snyder, Trinity football would be okay.
Yeah,
because just his development in the weight room and what he gets out of kids is amazing. And again, it's just one of the things I think that separates Trinity football and all sports benefit from Coach Snyder's influence there. But those guys will be in the weight room 3 days a week. As the weather gets nicer, we start to do some speed development work. And, you know, so much has changed and evolved from the old school ways of all this conditioning versus, again, we call it speed training, and the kids wear the catapult vest and we track their GPS data. And it's not a, you know, conditioning for football is not conditioning for cross country. And at least when I played, that's what it was. You're going out and you're running a mile after practice. No, it's about replicating football conditions, trying to sprint, you know, 3 to 4 seconds at max speed, 30 to 40 seconds of rest, and that replicates football plays. So it's trying to get the kids' bodies prepared for, and this is Coach Cobb's word, and I always hate the word grind, but the grind that is June, July, August, leading into the season. For us as coaches, you know, we sit down and we kind of reflect on the season and what went well and what didn't go well, in some areas that we want to improve on, and we set some goals. You know, in the spring, we try to always engage and either go into coaching clinics and trying to learn some things. Last year, we went to a clinic in Cincinnati, and I got to talk to the defensive coordinator at St. Edward's High School from Cleveland. Picked up a couple pressures from him and just some ways they do some things. We have an alum from Trinity, Max Stewart, who is an assistant, is a student assistant at UK. So we got the opportunity to go down to UK for a couple spring practices, sit in their meeting rooms, you know, and their coaches have been very gracious and welcoming to us, you know, just letting us ask questions and just see how they install things and teach things. We did the same thing at Louisville. Coach Brom was really great, had us up when he was at Purdue and has had us in at Louisville the last couple of years. Coach Logan and I met, his name's Coach Haynes, who's the defensive coordinator at IU. So I know we have a plan to try to go up there in the spring and see what they're doing, but just trying to pick brains of guys and see maybe if we can pick up a drill or some terminology or a way to teach something that we're already doing, that can make it easier for the kids to pick up, and then just kind of lay out how we're going to teach things in spring practice in the summer. You know, sometimes going back and looking at old films, so teams we played this year, like Frederick Douglass, like St. X, like Mayo, revisiting those games and how they attacked us to kind of start almost putting a game plan together for next season. And that, you know, we're not in any time crunch, so doing that February, March, April, May, just kind of at our own pace to get us ready to go. Because once it starts going, it is 24/7.
Yeah. Yeah, I really, it's like with football, it's like you guys are the last ones at the coach's office. Like, how long do you all talk after a game? It's got to be like 30 minutes to an hour, right?
Yeah, you know, there's, I think it's just the nature of it. You know, football is always so different. You know, baseball, basketball, you get to turn around and play again the next day or a day or two later. Football, knowing you're going to play every Friday, one, you get time to prepare, but then two, you have all that time to maybe second guess yourself. Yeah. Man, I wish I had done this differently or that differently. Yeah, I can always count on about 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning after game night. I usually stay up and grade the film, and Coach Carpenter does the same thing.
Yeah.
So I can always count on a text from Coach Carp. Hey, have you gotten to play 47 yet? What were we doing? You know? But, you know, it's sort of the nature of it, and I think it's that way that we approach it and that way that we're critical of ourselves as coaches again and push each other as coaches. And then the kids accept that coaching and rise to that challenge again is one of the things that makes Trinity football what it is.
Mm-hmm. So let's go to the state championship game this year. You all fall 14-0 behind Ryle early in the game. How do you make sure that your defense isn't going into crisis mode or like just imploding on themselves and that they're staying calm, cool, and collected? Because this is a younger group of guys where a lot of them didn't see much actual playing time in that last state championship game.
I think going back 2 weeks before, and being in that situation in the Ballard game and being fortunate to win that game, I think that probably played a bigger role than we realize. You know, Ballard, I thought, had a really good game plan and came out really aggressive, and we had to settle in and just sort of chip away to get back in that game. So, you know, if we had not had that, maybe if we shut Ballard out and shut Frederick Douglass out, were we going to be as ready to do that in the state finals? I don't know. But what we talked about on the bench in any game that we have a bad situation is, think back to our preparation in the week. You know, we knew for Ryle, we knew they had two really nice receivers, 3-1. We knew the running back, the Savage kid,
was a really
nice player, and he's only a junior, so he's going to get recruited by everybody. They had a big offensive line, and then the quarterback, not a big kid, but making tough plays, you know, with his legs and extending plays out of the pocket. So the frustrating part early was we had talked all week. I thought one of their best plays was scramble. And it's not like a backyard football, but a lot of teams teach scramble rules where, you know, all right, if I'm running a short route, I break deep. And if I'm a deep route, I come back to the quarterback. And so we talked all week that Nick Lococo or A.J. Hughes or Jack, whoever was in, they would relate to the quarterback. And the other guys, you couldn't leave your work, your receiver, until he crossed the line of scrimmage. And so the only thing I was frustrated about early is we gave up about 3 first downs where we let him get out of the pocket. And, you know, he might have got a 2-yard gain, but instead we left a receiver and let him just flip one for about an 8 or 9 yard gain and get a first down. And then that extended drives early, and then that's how they were able to score two times early. Once we settled in, and then I think once we got a couple hits on the quarterback and then he didn't want to scramble around as much, we settled in, and then I thought played kind of the game we wanted to play.
How excited were you when Bailey Vance got that pick six?
Oh, really excited. I mean, I was already pretty fired up after Caleb's play. If you go back and watch a highlight of that one, I'd probably get in trouble because I sprinted all the way down the sideline out of the coach's box. I was pretty fired up. But I was also really happy for Bailey because Bailey was our leader on defense. You know, you want to talk about somebody who just goes to work every single day, probably gets overlooked because he's not 6'3", 260 pounds, and has all these measurables. But I would put his film against anybody we played in, you know, the Carmel game where they have 2 Power 5 offensive tackles, the Frederick Douglass game where they have 2 or 3 Power 5 offensive linemen, that Ryle game, and Bailey's motor, his fundamentals. You know, he's somebody that I hope a lot of our younger players pay close attention to and watch, because if we had 10 or 11 guys playing like Bailey Vance, we're going to be just fine every single year. So for him to kind of end the game on that and kind of that note, that was definitely a highlight.
Yeah, because motor is just one of those things that you just can't teach. Like, you can't teach a motor. And, like, when you find a guy like that that can just go, but, like, is so efficient at going that hard every time, it's so hard to find a player but also stop a player like that.
You know, we teach a fundamental skill we call a steer technique. And again, it's just something that Coach Cobb brought in. And a lot of guys try to look for the ball. And you'll see a lot of times when that happens, their feet stop. And the steer is, we're not going to look for the ball. Wherever a guy's trying to block me, we call that his hard shoulder. And we say, we're going to fight that pressure. And Bailey, again, in the 11 years this staff has been at Trinity, he's probably been one of the best ones at, I don't have to stop my feet. I don't have to search. I'm just going to fight that pressure and trust that's going to take me to the ball. And then when he gets there, he finishes. And again, he was really good at just working up and down the line of scrimmage because he used his fundamentals and his technique so well.
So obviously, you know, this championship team and last year's championship team, both very different defenses, but they were both very successful defenses. What were the biggest differences, but also similarities you saw in those two defensive units that you had the opportunity to coach?
You know, I tried to tell anybody that would listen, you know, last year people talked to me about how are you going to replace Nate Tronzo? How are you going to replace Drew Davis, Brady McEnany? And what we as coaches knew that we were going to really miss off that 2023 team was Lincoln Mitchell, Dane Morrow, and Gabe Mingus. And again, this is just the way we run our defense, but we give our safeties a lot of responsibility. And if you ever watch a game when Coach Logan and I are sending signals in, we will signal fronts, we'll signal blitzes. We very rarely, if ever, signal a coverage. And what we do is we teach our players some rules that, hey, we want to run cover 2 in this situation, cover 4 in this situation. Some of our blitzes have certain coverages attached to them. But we teach the safeties how to get in and out of those because as the game starts going fast, you know, maybe they motion, they don't have time to look over to us on the sideline and see what a new call is going to be. So there's got to be some trust in there that they know what we want. And I mean, it takes some time and reps in the summer to teach that. But, you know, you had, again, in Dane, Lincoln, and Gabe, pretty much three-year starters. And so schematically, we probably did more in 2023, just mixed coverages more because those guys did have a ton of experience and could handle it. With this year's group, what we found when we didn't try to make the game plan super complicated and said, hey, we're going to do one or two things, and then during the week talk about, all right, here's how we think they're going to attack those one or two things. I thought this group played a lot faster, and we were able to add more in as the year went along. But just, you know, the difference between having 3-year starters in those spots versus maybe 1 or 1.5 year starters, it became our job as coaches to say, you know what, let's make sure that we're going to do things we can execute and that the kids are comfortable with. You know, I've tried at least, and some guys will do a better job than others, but, you know, to tell those teams, tell Caleb, tell Nick, tell JC, tell Jack, tell Will Ford, like, hey, if there's a call you're not comfortable with, I want you to tell me, because if you're not comfortable with it, I don't want to run it. And we want to make sure we're doing things in the game that the players are confident in so they'll play faster.
Mm-hmm. So I want to go back to so it was Coach Cobb's first couple of years. It was, so obviously, you know, when Beatty left, a really big hole, because it was Beatty won all those state championships, right? So Coach Cobb's first 2 years, they don't go according to plan. So then, you know, everyone on the outside that's not in Trinity is Trinity's not what they used to be. It's burning down. It's going to fall apart. Well, then that year, it really felt like after the Mail game, after that Mail loss, that everything just, that was kind of the wake-up call game that something has to change. Like, when do you see, like, players kind of accept the responsibility and just take over maybe after a tough performance?
You know, there's a lot that goes into it, and it's hard to pinpoint one specific thing, you know, in a 15-game season. You know, we try to tell them, like I said already, that we're going to trust our preparation. We're going to trust the competition that we play is going to get us ready. You know, I think it's interesting, and we felt it as coaches, and I know the kids did too. You're talking about the 21 and 22 seasons. Mm-hmm. You know, and even in those years, if you want to say those were down seasons or we weren't doing the things the Trinity way, I mean, in 2021, we went to the semifinals and lost to Mail, and in 22, you know, we lost a really tight ball game at Bryan Station in the third round. So, you know, for those to be down years, and we were still in the Final Four, Final Eight, one, that's a little frustrating sometimes, because those are still very solid seasons, and for a lot of places that would be really great. But I don't want to ever – we know from the outside that, again, the expectations are the expectations at Trinity. And again, that's, again, another reason why people want to play there and coaches want to coach there, because it elevates everybody. But I don't want to discredit the work those teams did, because, again, there's guys like Cole Wycliffe that, I mean, just gave his heart and soul to this program and, you know, willed us in 2022 to get as far as we could, you know. So there's a lot to still be proud of those seasons. And, you know, maybe again between COVID and guys not getting as many reps because, you know, we didn't dress as many guys at the end of that season and less experience, because, again, that 2020 class was kind of like the group that graduated last year, where there were a ton of senior starters on both sides of the ball, and you had to replace a lot of new guys. There were some challenges, but, again, as coaches, I don't want to discount, again, the Dev Williams, the guys that played really hard on those seasons, because they did a lot. I think for the 23 season, what was probably the wake-up call is just, you know, we ended up making a change at quarterback, and that's a lot to put on a freshman, and Zane Johnson is going to be pretty special. He already is special. But, you know, he started his first varsity game at Center Grove and had to turn around and play Mail and Carmel. And then, you know, and then he really settled in against St. X and had a great game. And I think after that he got more confident. So I don't know that we necessarily changed a whole lot. But, again, it was more just we know it's a long season and we can't panic after one loss. And we trust the preparation and the work we put in and keep trying to work every week. The same way, and not maybe don't get too excited after a big win, but don't get too down after a loss. And again, it's a long season. It is a very long season at times.
Yeah, I feel like that's something really important, because, like, you know, you all, like, it was you sadly couldn't be there because you had a wedding to attend to. But, you know, when they lost the St. X game, that very tight game, it's like that's what the public's going to go crazy that Trinity lost that game. But then it's like you hope that the players don't get too down on themselves because is it the big rivalry game? Absolutely. But there's still so much more to work for just after that game.
Right. You know, the St. X game is not a district game for us. So, you know, it's Ballard, Eastern, Oldham County that determine home field advantage the first two rounds. I mean, you want to win all those non-district games because of the RPI now. But yes, obviously beating St. X means a lot at Trinity. And so you always want to beat your rival. And I'm sure playing the game on a different day and off schedule didn't help. But they were in the same situation. And so, again, you try your best to learn from that. And, you know, one thing as coaches, we did some things differently, you know, with how we brought the team in, like when we played Ballard because we didn't have school that Friday because of fall break for the playoffs when we didn't have school during Thanksgiving. We did some things in our preparation differently than we did the St. X week because of that game getting moved today and just trying to keep guys in their routine. And so, again, while it did not feel good in the moment, it probably helped us in the long run. So it's one of those we just try to learn from.
Mm-hmm. So what's something that you look for? Obviously, you've coached a lot of great players in your time. What's the biggest thing you look for or you see that can really make a player stand out from everybody else on the field?
You know, there's going to be guys that have different strengths and weaknesses. You know, I talked about Lincoln and Gabe and Dane already, but for us, probably the biggest characteristic is guys that communicate on the field. Coach Cobb says it till he's blue in the face, but we as coaches know when we have a really good team when our guys are talking. And I told you before we got on here, I listened to JC, Jack, and Caleb's episode as preparation, and those guys made a point of, you know, sometimes the coaches weren't that positive and were getting on us a little bit, and we had to motivate ourselves. And I'm sure I'm not always a ray of sunshine at practice. Things like that. But, you know, what we always try to communicate to those guys is we've seen what the state championship teams look like, and we weren't practicing like those teams yet. So it's not anything personal. And I get when you're 17, 16 years old, it probably does feel like, oh, Coach Fox hates me and is getting on me. But, you know, we know what to expect. And again, we know what our practice looks like and sounds like when we're playing at a really high level. So I would say for me, you know, I coach linebackers and Coach Karp coaches inside linebackers. So it's that communication. Gabe Mingus was really great at it. You know, two other kids that Coach Karp and I talk about all the time, Ethan Hall and Nick Cardosi. Again, just great communicators on the field. And if you ever go back and watch film, they're making our calls, they're pointing to other guys, they're getting them lined up right. Because when that happens, you're kind of echoing and confirming what you expect to see. And you're making sure the guy next to you is right. And then that allows that guy to play fast and play confident. So when you have guys that can elevate those guys around them because they're talking all the time, makes the whole team play a little faster.
Mm-hmm. So for those who don't know, Coach Fox is also a math teacher. And so last year, you found an error with the RPI ratings, which ended up boosting us up a little bit. How did you find that error, and how long did it take you to make sure you were right?
I don't want to bore all your listeners talking about math. But the really simple thing is, the RPI is composed of winning points. Essentially, you get a point if you win. You don't get anything if you lose, sort of like a winning percentage. And then there's a strength of schedule component. So there's your opponent's winning points and your opponent's opponents. And one thing that the KHSA does is there's a multiplier. So if you beat a higher class opponent, you can earn more than 1 point for a win. So theoretically, if a 2A team beat a 4A team, their winning percentage could be higher than 100%. And I just happened to be looking at it one day, and I noticed, because Mayo, I think, was the highest at that point, and they were undefeated, and their winning points were over 100%. And I just said, well, wait a second, because we're 6A, So none of the 6A schools get that multiplier because we can't beat anybody. So there shouldn't be any mathematical way they could be over 100%. So I started poking around, and I was trying to – the KHSA outlines the formula on their website, so I was trying to work it out. And then I just got to the point that I realized I couldn't – the RPI that was published on their website, I couldn't replicate and get that number. So I wanted to contact the KHSA, and it's funny you mentioned that because Mr. Rob Saxton, when he was still the AD, that's the first thing he said. I was like, you know, I want to contact the KHSA. And the first thing he emailed me back was, well, are you sure your math is right? And I was like, well, I'm pretty sure. But I actually contacted Julian Tackett, who's the commissioner of the KHSAA, and he called me and said, hey, can you do a Zoom call? And the guy's name is Frank Reihard. Mm-hmm. So the KHSA has a scoreboard for every sport where they publish the stats and all this stuff. And Mr. Reihard is retired, and he actually lives in France now. And so Julian Tackett, who's the commissioner, and Frank Reihard and I did a Zoom call while he's in France, and we walked through, and we figured out where the error was in his formula. And it ended up bumping us up enough that we were at home in the playoffs, you know, difference between having to travel to Frederick Douglass in that semifinal game in 2023 versus being at home. So it was worth it. And I've had some emails with those guys in the since then, you know, hey, would you mind just kind of double checking something? And, you know, I've had a conversation with them. If they ever revise the formula, would I be interested in being on a committee and, you know, looking at it? So, you know, one as a math teacher and just kind of nerding out a little bit. And then also as a coach, you know, if I get to be a voice in that process, it would be kind of cool. But no, really, it was just noticing that, hey, this number was over 100%, and I didn't think that was possible, and just kind of led me down a rabbit hole. And then the math teacher and the nerd in me kind of took over, and I wanted to figure out, like, was I doing something wrong, or why, you know, why couldn't I get these numbers to work out right?
So obviously, you know, RPI every year comes up as discussion that it's a broken, flawed system. So for a team like Trinity, who plays a bunch of out-of-state teams, and they're counted as an average team in the RPI standpoint, what would you like to see fixed in RPI to make it just include everybody's schedule?
You know, I think now that I've dug in it a little bit, I do think I would like to see the winning percentage maybe be weighted more heavily. You know, winning percentage is roughly 35% of the formula, and the two strength of schedule components are almost 65%. And so again, the reason a team like Ryle was so high, number one, they won games. But then they played Cal, they played St. X, they played Cooper, they played Fort Thomas Highlands. And, you know, Cal, Cooper, Fort Thomas Highlands, 3A and 5A schools, so then they get multipliers for beating other opponents. So, again, essentially it makes their strength of schedule look stronger than ours. And they played a really tough schedule. Selfishly, I think Center Grove and Carmel and Cincinnati St. X are probably tougher opponents. And so it is frustrating that that doesn't get counted in. And how would you account for those out-of-state teams fairly? I don't know. You know, I will say this for the RPI. There's always going to be blowouts that happen.
Yeah.
But I think since they started using the RPI, the matchups in the state championship have been better. You know, when I was coaching at Trinity, in 2014 we beat Dixie Heights, and in 2016 we beat Lafayette, and running clock both of those opponents. And obviously our last two state championships were not running clocks. You know, Ryle was a really good team. They deserved to be there. Bryan Station last year was a really good team. You know, the other thing I think that is a nice added benefit for RPI, also in the old system, your district was paired with another district, and that made up a region. And so if you were in a district with two really strong teams, only one of those teams could advance past the third round.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in 2023, Trinity and Ballard from the same district were both in the Final Four. And on the other side, Bryan Station and Frederick Douglass from the same district were both in the Final Four. In 2022, Mayo and Bullitt East, two teams from the exact same district, played for a state championship. You look at a tough district like Manuel and St. X where they're at. You look at something like Christian Academy and Central being in the same district in 3A. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't punish a team for necessarily being in a tough district where you know only one of those teams is going to potentially advance beyond the third round. So Maybe there's some things that needs to be tweaked with the formula, but I think the intention is motivated by the right things, and I do think it's created some better matchups in the semifinals and state championship games. And I don't know if that was the KHSA's original intention or not, but I think that's just resulted from it.
So, you know, a lot of past players, especially from that 2024 class, all really just, they fell in love with you. They love talking to you. How do you build relationships with players, but then also coach them? Like, how do you draw that line of like, yeah, I'll be your friend, but I'm also going to be your coach and push you hard?
You know, I don't think there's one answer there. I think a lot goes into it. I think you have to be consistent. And that's the same as a teacher, right? You know, teachers that maybe are really hard on some kids and let some kids get away with everything. I think as a coach, you have to try to be fair. And, you know, I'm going to get on J.C. Wilson the same way I would get on a freshman. Or I'm going to get on Brady McEnany the same way I would get on a guy that's a backup. You know, you have to treat all those kids fairly. You have to treat kids and show them that you support them. You know, 2 years ago, I remember Jeremiah Lynn got on me a little bit because I wore Tennessee stuff to practice. And it's because Dane Morrow signed with Tennessee that week. And I told him, hey, when he signed, you know, I'm not a Tennessee fan, but I'm a Dane Morrow fan. So I'm going to support everything he can do, you know. And the more I've coached and the longer I've done, this is year 17 for me. You know, I try to tell all these guys, too, that in the season, I spend more time with some of these kids and these players than I do my own family.
Yeah.
And so I really do mean it, that I love all these guys and think about them like I do my own children. And I want them to be successful. I mean, I was literally texting with Gabe Mingus till almost midnight on Christmas Day. You know, not about football, just about life and things that were going on. I've been talking to Brady McEnany since they got in El Paso for the bowl game because, you know, he hasn't got to play this year really at Louisville. He knew as a walk-on, but he's going to be on the kickoff team this week, and that's, he's really good, excited to get on the field. So, you know, there's a kid, Jacob Mutchler, who I coached at Oldham County, and then he went to Hanover and played, and that's where I went to school, and stay in touch with him and his family. Another kid that played for me, Jacob Ratliff at Oldham County, he's working for a company in Florida now, and I stay in touch. You know, again, it's just trying to build those relationships because we are around each other so much. And I will also just say, probably one of the hardest things as a coach, I know people are going to complain, you know, the fans in the stands, sometimes we're brilliant, sometimes as coaches we're idiots, you know. The one area that I still struggle with, and I had this probably more at Oldham County when I was a head coach, but if a kid wasn't playing enough and a parent would come in and say, well, you know, you're not playing him because you don't like my son. And every time, I'm not going to lie, that hurts.
Yeah.
Because I just want to tell those moms and dads, like, again, you realize if I didn't like your son, I wouldn't be doing this, and I'd be at home with my kids, you know. And I think about the best coaches that I ever had and the impact they have on me, and that's what I want to be for kids, is just if I can be another adult that they trust and can be a reference on a job application one day, if a lesson that we teach as a coach helps them one day be a better husband or be a better father and just mature as a man. Like, that's why we do this. It's not about winning state championships. I mean, all that stuff is fun, and it makes sometimes the grind and all the work worth it. But, again, having those conversations like I was talking about with Gabe or Brady, like, that's what really is meaningful. You know, J.C. Wilson and I joked all season. I've got a little picture frame on my desk at home of every, you know, my linebacker group when every year we've won a state championship. And so I started joking with JC. It's like, you got to get on the bookshelf there, you know? And so after the game, he's like, all right, we got to get that picture so we can be on the bookshelf, you know? And I tell those guys, I'm always a phone call away. I can help with anything. And so I don't know if that answered your question or not.
That was a good answer. That answered it.
But again, I think just trying, the longer, again, I've done this, I played for a head coach when I was a kid who would scream and yell and cuss and act tough. And you know, I think as a young coach, I tried to be that way, and I realized, you know,
it doesn't work like that all the time.
It doesn't, and every kid's different. You know, there's some kids that you can. Bailey Vance, I could call him out in front of the whole group, and he would respond, yes, sir. And there's some guys you got to put your arm around them and talk to them one-on-one and get them to respond differently. And when you can show kids that you know enough about them on that individual level to that you know how to reach them and how to get a response from them, that they will listen and take criticism because they know you have their best interest at heart.
Mm-hmm. And so last question, who would you say is the best nickel you've ever coached?
The best nickel?
Yes.
Gabe Mingus was pretty good from the standpoint that he was the most versatile. We didn't sub a lot in 2023. We were able to play Gabe against a tight end.
Mm-hmm.
We were able to play him in zone coverage, play him in man coverage. This year, if you noticed in games, we didn't have somebody like that. So we played Graham Botner
mm-hmm.
as a linebacker. And then when we wanted, if we knew it was an obvious passing down, we would sub in a third corner or an extra safety to try to get that. So Gabe was probably skill-wise the most versatile at that position. I didn't coach Jack Dingle when he played at Trinity. That was the 4 years I was gone to Oldham County. But I think Coach Cobb would probably say he had that versatility and he played at the University of Cincinnati. Just the best two linebackers that I've coached while I was at Trinity. The very first year, a kid by the name of Zach Berger. He was a senior on that 2014 state championship mm-hmm. team. Played at Center College. Just had a physicality about him. Had really good size. Was a good leader. And the other one's Ethan Hull. Just one of the toughest players I've ever been around. He played 1 year with almost a cast on the whole season, and it didn't affect him. It just would fly around, would be real physical. I remember there's a guy, he was at Murray State at the time, and now he's the defensive coordinator for Eastern Kentucky University. But he came and watched a practice, and that was the first thing he said to me and Coach Cobb was just, Ethan Hull's a dude. And he talks, he tells everybody where to go, he knows everybody's job, and he backs it up because he's just a tough, physical player. And he would hit you. And, everybody now talks about spread offense and scoring points. And I played offense. I was a receiver in college. But to me, what's exciting about coaching defense and playing defense is football is still a physical game. And I think that's something that just as a program and as a culture we embrace is that we're going to play a physical style. And there are some teams that have gotten away from that. And I do think the physicality that we try to bring on defense sets us apart in a lot of games, especially against teams that maybe are more talented athletically than us, have more speed. The physicality can make up for some of that.
Yeah, that was a Dane Morrow question, actually. He wanted to know the answer to that.
Dane was only a nickel for part of the time, and then we had to move him to safety.
Yeah.
But for the same reason, because, if you go back and watch the 2021 playoff film against Mayo, and that was when we first started playing Dane at nickel. Mayo tried to run at Dane because Dane would give you everything he had, but Dane was at the time probably about 165 pounds, whereas Gabe, by the end of their senior year, he was about 195, almost 200 pounds. So, it was a little easier playing the box. I'll tell you what, though, that St. X game in the stadium in 23. First play of the game, Dane comes up and lays a hit. And again, that set a tone for the whole game, without question.
All right. Well, Coach Fox, thank you for doing this. This has been the Uncensored Podcast, and I'm here with
Michael Fox.
Thank you for listening.